Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your co-host Jocelyn, and joining me as always is my co-host Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, this time, as always. Last time was not as always. Last week.
So, how was your trip to Montreal?
It was really good. We got to Montreal. I think we left the day we recorded, so unfortunately I was unable to be on the show on my birthday, but hey, some people like make it a habit of taking the day off of their birthday, and it just sort of worked out that way, so I don't know. But no, Montreal was good. It's a very busy city. I was probably like 10 minutes away from Ubisoft Montreal. I literally could have walked over there and said, "That is a building with the Ubisoft logo," and then walked away, because I don't think they have tours.
I don't know if they do tours. I feel like that would be right up there with Blizzard. Like, technically they do tours, but you kind of have to know somebody, and you have to like sign a big NDA and all the rest of it. So I feel like Ubisoft would be kind of the same.
They'd be pretty, you know,
video game secrets.
Yeah, and you'd think they would be very tight-lipped just based on the fact that they've had every Assassin's Creed leaked ever. And I don't want to be the guy that does the next one. Or I suppose not the next one, but the one after that, considering the next one's already been linked. So
announced.
Yeah, maybe next time I go to Montreal, that's what I'll try to do. In which, Ubisoft, if you're listening to this, just disregard everything I just said. But no, it was a lot of fun. We saw a Habs game. The Habs won. PK Subban got injured, but we won't talk about that. I don't know. He's a good player, I guess.
Big hockey fan right here.
Boys. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. The one thing I was like, just on hockey, you know, Carey Price, the goalie that everybody likes, and I like him too, but he wasn't playing. I didn't even know he was injured. He's been injured for like 3 months. That's how much I pay attention to hockey. I knew I had these tickets since Christmas, and I got to the game. I was like, that's not Carey Price. What is happening? So,
oh man, yeah, I'm so out of the loop on what's actually happening in hockey right now. Like, my Leafs stop having a chance at the Stanley Cup somewhere in and around like October. So
I just
don't pay attention usually.
Yeah, I think the Habs they are on the cusp of not being able to cut it. I think they are failing right now. But you know, back to video games, I did get a chance to meet longtime fan of the show Val.
Nice.
Turns out she's 20 minutes from Montreal. I didn't want to be that guy who said, like, I know Val's French Canadian, therefore she lives in Quebec, therefore Quebec is so small that she could drive. Montreal's like the center of Quebec, right? So like everybody can get there in like 30 minutes tops. So but when I did actually reach out to her, she's like, yeah, I'm 20 minutes, I'll come up for dinner, it's fine. So it was a lot of fun. We talked about Dragon Age, and we talked about Gamers Inn, obviously. And we talked about The Witcher, and she convinced me to play The Witcher again. So I'm back playing The Witcher
again. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So is there any new, like, DLC or anything with The Witcher that pulled you back in? Or that you're having fun with now?
No. There was DLC that came out at the tail end of summer, and I didn't pick it up solely because I was just not back into the game. And there's so much to The Witcher. It's so dense that adding more content to it would just make me vomit. I don't know. It would cause me to do something, like probably stop playing the game altogether. Maybe that's why I stopped playing, because it was just so much. Mm-hmm. But with these huge games, you kind of have to pick a path and stick to it. And you're going to miss content. In a 500-hour game where the extra fluff quests are like, go kick this pig, go save this person who you don't care about. Those are the two quests I could think of. It's just so much. So I think when I jumped back into The Witcher, I made a point of being like, okay, I'm gonna do the story content, focus on the story content, and if the extra stuff piques my interest, I'll do the extra stuff. But other than that, I just want to do a clear and direct path. I want to pull a Jocelyn. I'm gonna save the world.
Yes, finally.
It has to happen, because I'm sitting here trying to cure this curse of some person who, I don't know, like one of the quests was like, I need you to cure a curse from my kid. And then you go and find out, oh, it was a scorned lover that said the curse. Like, I'm trying to save the world here. You know what? Go to Jerry Springer, sort your shit out. I'm going to save the world. And just Geralt is having none of this business right now. He's just not happy. about Good. Having to deal with all these people. So, and I'm not happy dealing with all these people. Like, I'm trying to find my long lost estranged daughter or something.
Is it daughter? I thought it was lover. I thought she was No.
Well, okay, that's not true. I guess there is the lover, and then there's the
lover. Because as far as I've gone, you're chasing after your old lover person, yes. who's like, I can't even remember now.
Yennefer.
See, I got so like, oh yeah, no, I remember her name is Yennefer because that's right. stupid. But
yeah.
No, it's I like, don't remember like anything about her story or why I'm chasing her. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's like I got so bogged down in all the little side quests in the first little town. I was just like, I don't even.
See, this is a similar issue that we had. And I think that's why I stopped playing is because there's just so much there. And for those people who want to buy one game, play it straight for 3 months. And then get more content and play it for another month straight. Like that's what it's there for. But for gamers like us who want to try the next big thing, like it's impossible to keep playing a 200-hour RPG and once again trying to solve some petty farmer's issues. You know, like just take your time, sort it out yourselves. I gotta save the world. but no, it's Yennefer, your lover, in which, and then there's like Triss, who is like your ex, your lover you had when you had amnesia, and then like there, it's like a soap opera, basically.
It sounds like
yeah, it's really bad. But you actually are trying to save. You're trying to find your adoptive daughter is probably the best way to put it. Like a younger Witcher who's gone missing, and you're trying to pick up her trail, and that's the whole story. So basically, the whole story is. She's in danger. You have to find her as soon as possible. So if anything, if you'd played maybe a couple more hours and got to the point where it's like, yeah, this is your ticking time bomb, your clock here. You could have been like, oh, well, now I can ignore all the chicken
all the other things.
You know, because now you've got the Mass Effect going, like the end of the world clock is going on. Literally, because if you don't save your daughter, like the world will end, I think is the story.
I will say though that I've watched Matt play a lot of different things since we've been living together, and watching him play and do all the side quests, like when he actually goes and does the main story content, it's so much easier. Like it's content that I smash my face against because I'm just like main story, whoom, blinders. And he's just like, I must do all the things and get all the XP and level up my whole tech tree before I hit boss number one. And then he just like plows through all the bosses. So that is definitely the way to do it. But I hate that.
Yeah, and I find with The Witcher, it's sort of the, I don't know if you were describing his time with The Witcher, but or just, that sounds like Matt just playing every
games
game.
Games in general, yeah.
Well, in The Witcher, it feels like, XP is weird. Like, you don't get a lot of XP for killing things, if any, I think. You know, combat is just a progression mechanic that is there to allow you to take care of enemies. You can't grind XP, but you get XP from quests, and the story quests actually give a lot more XP. It's almost like the XP is proportional to how important the quest was.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so if you do a really stupid quest where you just have to run around talking to people, and it's like I said, a Jerry Springer sideshow, you're not going to get a lot of XP as compared to doing like a big epic main part of the story where you're going to get basically a level up guaranteed. Because you'll find if you're not doing the main content, you won't level up for a very long time. And then you'll go do a main story and it's like, oh yeah, you progressed. Here's a level, maybe one and a half. How is it going? So that's been a lot of fun. And I'm sort of flying through it now that I've sort of adopted that mentality. I think I'm preparing for the final mission, basically, where it's like, okay, collect your dudes, go help people and collect your dudes. It's kind of exactly like Mass Effect 3, you know.
Okay, get all the dudes together and save the world.
Yeah, and it's
save the dudes, save the world.
Yeah, well, it's not just dudes too. Like, you're gonna have an opportunity to recruit women dudes as well, you know, like all kinds of great people. It's equal opportunity. Geralt, what's his name? Geralt. Is it? Now I forget what his real name is. We'll just keep calling him Geralt.
I think that's it. I really do. I think it's Geralt, I think.
Or is it Geralt?
Geralt.
Now I don't know. I've said it so many times, I can't even think of... Is it Yennefer or Jennifer?
Shut up.
Okay. Anyways, I've just been enjoying it. And that game is beautiful. It's so pretty. There are moments in that game where you just kind of look to the side and see this vista. And probably the best effects I've ever seen in a game of just wind blowing through a forest. It's just really something. And I hope the DLC is just that. It's just a bunch of forests with wind blowing through it. I'm actually expecting to play a lot more because there is the final piece of DLC coming out soon. They haven't announced a date for it yet.
But. So when do you actually go back to work?
Well, yeah, in a month. So, yeah.
So you have 1 month.
Yeah.
Countdown to finish all the games.
I have, and that's sort of the conversation I had with Val, and she said, you know, oh, when are you going to go back to Witcher 3? And that's sort of been a conversation for like the last 8 months, because I keep saying I want to beat it. And I have been very busy with Caden and with Ashley and other obligations, but being on parental leave, one of those obligations is not work. So I can kind of, in those chunks of time where Caden is asleep and I've got enough sleep and Ashley's catching up on sleep and it's literally just me waiting for something to happen, I can play The Witcher 3 because I can pause it pretty regularly to go and take care of things. So what may be 2 hours of gameplay is actually maybe 8 hours of standby. So my play clock is not even going to be remotely accurate. But I'm hoping to beat it before I go back, and then that's when they'll probably drop the big piece of DLC, and I'll be like, well, shit. I'll never get to beat it. And then there's the other DLC that I haven't touched yet, in which I hear is pretty good, too. So, yeah, I don't know. And I got to beat it, though. I have to. I promised. I made a promise. I said, Val, if you come to Montreal and we meet up, I will beat The Witcher 3. It's happening.
Really? That's how you got her to come meet you?
No, not really.
I just thought it would be like, cute baby.
yeah, that helps, certainly. The Witcher 3, Caden, and we're leaving tomorrow. kind of was like, oh, okay. But no, it was a lot of fun, and I am really enjoying my time with The Witcher 3, although it if there's one thing going against it, it's just it's so long-winded. Like, that's another issue with doing side content, is that it is even more so long-winded. It's like, okay, I don't need
to hear. It's like long-winded with no payoff.
Yeah, it's like, it's just so, they recorded so much dialogue, and I gotta commend it to them. It's a big game, it's a crowning achievement, but holy crap, is it wordy. There's just so much dialogue, and that's why I'm kind of thinking, like, maybe we don't want them to have, like, a voiced Zelda, because then they'll just turn into this, like, long-winded Zelda. I kind of, even though we kind of already suffer from that, so imagine if you couldn't just skip through all that, like, text, that gobbledygook that they give you in Zelda, because I've been playing Twilight Princess.
Yeah, it's not that much. I'm playing Twilight Princess right now too, and even then it's like their sentences are maybe 5 to 8 words long. Like, they're very, very short. Usually you've got 3 or 4 sentences per person per cutscene. Like, it's pretty short. There's some overarching big story pieces that get longer cutscenes, but they're very much like background world lore, which is actually kind of important in Twilight Princess, because it is the whole Twilight realm is completely new. So I can see how they need a little bit more setup there. But it's pretty short for in a lot of cases when you're talking about things and going through things, and you can just read it. So like, basically, it's over as fast as I can read it, as opposed to having it read to me, which always takes longer.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is I feel, and this is probably just a personal issue, and after I finish talking, it's like, you're so silly. But with The Witcher 3, I kind of want to hear all the actors say the words, even though I have subtitles on and I've already read it, because I feel like that's part of the game. Mm-hmm. But then maybe that reinforces just how not interesting some of it is, because it's just like, well, I've read it, and there's no way you're gonna say it more interesting than I just did in my head. So if Zelda actually like voices all the words, that's probably why I go so quickly, because I just read it too. Like, it's pretty quick. It's like boom, 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 and you're done. And being a GameCube game originally, you know, comparing it to The Witcher 3 that just came out, is kind of night and day in terms of the tech available. So yeah, they probably had a less wordy Zelda. Even Skyward Sword was a bit more like long-winded, but not as bad. I don't know. But I'm really enjoying Twilight Princess, and listening to last week's episode, it sounds like you're happy to be back in the world of Twilight.
Yeah, I can't believe how much and how quickly it pulled me in. It was just like, oh man, a Zelda that isn't just like straight up the same. And that's also why I like Majora's Mask. Like, my three favorite Zelda games are all pretty different from each other. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, obviously Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, and Twilight Princess. They're just so different. Like, mm-hmm. they tend to, or Zelda's tend to, post Ocarina of Time, be very like linear and the same all the time. Like, you have to go save like the Gorons and the Zora and the forest people, and then you have to go to the six different like light, shadow, fire, water. I'm trying to think of the other ones. But there's always six temples anyways. There's right. three original ones and then six temples afterwards and then big boss fight. And then I find that Majora's Mask, with the masks are different. So far, Twilight Princess is different. Mm-hmm. You have to go to the temples, but I don't know. It seems so much more involved. I'm mm-hmm. probably like 15 hours in and just finished the fire stuff. Like, I don't know. It feels like everything is more in depth. It's a little bit tougher, but not like way too challenging. And feels like there's a lot of content in the first part of the game. And I can't remember a lot of the boss fights. I can't remember like where the story goes from here. So mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it's like rose colored glasses or something, but man, Twilight Princess is so fun so far.
Yeah, no, I'm really enjoying going back to Twilight Princess, and when I picked it up a couple weeks ago when it came out, I was just really excited to jump back in. And having said, when I played it on Wii, like, this is kind of a completely different game, where even at the very beginning, I played through the beginning of Twilight Princess again not too long ago. I think it was when all the Zelda for Wii U was announced, and I was like, I need to play a Zelda. Mm-hmm. So I popped in the Wii disc, and so I played that intro bit, which is long, but you know, in its own, if you haven't played it before, it's still pretty good, but I think it is a little long. But there's a point where you have to go left instead of right, so I'm walking and it's like, oh, where's the entrance? And it's a flipped world, so I was like, oh right, I played the flipped world. And it's just really good to be playing again, like, sort of with the controller and just having a great time. And I'm about same spot, like Fire Dungeon, and sort of taking my time, because I think this is going to be sort of the Zelda game, my piecemeal from now until, hopefully now until whenever we get some more details on Zelda mm-hmm. for Wii U, because it just, it,
you're so ready for that, right?
I am, and I was thinking about it after playing The Witcher and Twilight Princess and trying to think of, like, what do we know about Zelda for Wii U? We kind of know the art style. We know the general thought process around, like, basically making the whole game Hyrule Field. Mm-hmm. That, like, go anywhere kind of thing, and that's about it. Like, we don't know a whole lot about the new Zelda game, and that kind of makes me a little nervous, because I kind of went back and watched the trailers and the little gameplay snippets that they showed, and The Witcher 3 just is that it's like a big open area and there's so much to do, and it's densely populated. And then I remember, then I was playing Twilight Princess, and you get into Hyrule Field and there's nothing going on. And I know the difference is 10 years, but when you look at the last sort of open space they did with Zelda, which was probably Twilight Princess, it's like, there's literally nothing happening in this giant open world, you know, like this giant open field. It's kind of barren. Did you come across that yet with the Hyrule Field there? Did you kind of
catch Kevbergard? Yeah, I haven't explored too much of it, but definitely, mm-hmm. like, even just when you have to run from, like, where the starting area is to where the fire area is, mm-hmm. I'm just like, when you do that run, like, I don't even think I got attacked by a bad guy.
Yeah.
It's a fairly long, you know, section of field. I had to go, I was randomly trying to fish, and I had to go somewhere else. Oh, I think I had to chase after something or something. I can't remember. Anyways, and I think I came across two enemies, mm-hmm. and I basically went from like where the fire temple was to like kind of like the middle of the field. And I was just kind of like,
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I can see like it does seem empty in Twilight Princess, but
yeah.
Given that the pretty much from what we've been shown, and again, this was a long time ago, so the game might have changed completely, but from what we've been shown of Zelda, it's very much Hyrule field centered open world kind of thing mm-hmm. where you can go anywhere and do anything. So I feel like since it's centered on that field and that open world, it's probably going to have a whole lot more going on than it did. Because even if you look at Link Between Worlds, mm-hmm. there was a ton of stuff. Like, there were enemies, there were caves to explore. Like, there was lots of stuff, like, in and around when you were trying to get from point A to point B. So I feel like we're probably going to see a lot of that, but in, like, a 3D open world exploration type of a way.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not necessarily, like, condemning Nintendo's new Zelda game based on a game that came out 10 years ago. Obviously, there's a big difference, but even looking at what they've shown, it didn't even illustrate that there's a lot going on. Like Jim in the chat room saying, it's like, yeah, the horse won't run into trees, and there's trees, and sometimes when you run into a dungeon, there's some bad guys. And I realized, like, that's like, when they showed that, the game was coming out like a year later, and now it's 2 years later from that footage, and they haven't shown anything since except for mm-hmm. maybe like 5 seconds, literally. And I don't know, like, we're kind of on the cusp of learning a lot more about the game, so I don't want to speculate too much, but just, I know that they're looking at Western games going toward, and this has been documented, like, they're looking at Western games to kind of see how they can change Zelda in a different way, like, rather than making another Ocarina of Time with birds, they're going to try and make a Zelda game that kind of, like, pulls from some of the Western open RPGs, like Skyrim. I think Witcher was another one that was mentioned, and that they've played it. And I'm just really looking forward to it. And I think Witcher's kind of like a good goalpost for them. But I don't necessarily want like that mature Zelda. I just want like a world that feels alive, as opposed mm-hmm. to Hyrule Field, or even looking at Skyward Sword. Like, when you're flying around in Skyward Sword, that cloud area didn't feel alive. You were the only yeah. thing kind of flying around, mm-hmm. Except for a couple little enemies. But I don't know, I got yeah, really freaked
there's
out.
There's a really fine balance between creating an interesting open world that mm-hmm. you can explore and, like you said, feels alive, and making something that's just like, oh man, stupid little enemy fight, mm-hmm. like, yeah. Skyrim, so there's definitely really a difference well. Between making something feel populated and interesting versus just, you know, constant encounters, which you don't really want either, because you mm. want the ability to get from one place to another, and you want players to actually want to take that journey and to go from point A to point B on the ground instead of using some sort of a fast travel mechanic. Like, you want them in there experiencing things, exploring and looking, and if you kind of take too many enemies and populate it that way, people are just going to be like, well, I could fight 20 things and go 20 feet, or I could fast travel.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, after playing a lot of The Witcher and then looking at other Western RPGs that might have inspired the new Zelda game, like maybe Skyrim or Dragon Age, or even Fallout, or not Fallout, that came out later, but those two games have these open worlds that feel alive. But the like you described, the mobility isn't there. Like in Skyrim, when you got overwhelmed by enemies, like trying to run was a pain in the butt because they just follow you. You had aggro, like those things were yeah. coming after you. Same with Dragon Age, except Dragon Age is like just felt clunky. Like your guy was a tank and you walked like a robot. in The Witcher 3, like when you move on that horse, like you can get away from guys and it feels fluid. You can even take cheap shots. Similar in Twilight Princess, when you're running through that field and they eventually do populate it with enemies, you can kind of just run by them and give them a quick slice. It's just, I'm really hoping that's the case. And I know we don't have to wait too long to find out, but just doesn't it feel like we should have had like something by now? Like even like
I'm trying not to think about it too much. Like I want new Zelda, and I don't want to think about the fact that they haven't told us anything, and that might potentially mean like no new Zelda or super delayed new Zelda or not the Zelda we're looking for.
they're talking about NX now. Like they're talking about Twilight Princessing. Like they're not talking about it, but like sort of the industry is like suggesting that this could be another Twilight Princess, which is another reason I've been thinking about the new Zelda. It's like, what happens? Like Twilight Princess is a game that released on the last three platforms that Nintendo put out. It was a GameCube game, a Wii game, and now it's a Wii U game. So, and then I think Skyward Sword is also going to be coming out on Wii U. I was reading it might get just dropped into the eShop, but what if Zelda, the new Zelda, is an NX title? Like, do you go out and buy the NX, or do you just suck it up and play it on Wii U? Like,
it's definitely whatever the new, unless they come out and say it's only on the next system, which if that's the case, I probably just won't play the next Zelda, which would also make me very sad. But even a new Zelda won't make me go buy the next Nintendo system. I'm sorry.
I don't know what the next Nintendo system is. I don't even know. Like, I could say, yeah, I'll probably buy it, like, outright, but it cannot be another Wii U.
And that shocks no one.
No, it doesn't shock anybody, because I really adore Nintendo games. But for a person who maybe is a fan of, like, let's say, if it's Zelda, like, now we're not even looking at Zelda one per generation. Like, it's almost like one every other generation, which is kind of sad. If it is on NX, I don't know. It won't be the big step that Twilight Princess was from GameCube to Wii in terms of adding, like, motion control and flipping it. It'll probably just be higher res graphics and maybe, I guess, portable play. That's what people are talking about with the NX. But no, just playing Twilight Princess and Witcher 3, it just kind of made me think, oh, man, we have that new Zelda coming soon, don't we? It's so soon. But I'm excited.
Yeah. I've also been playing, well, kind of playing. I've been watching Matt play Yoshi's Woolly World, which is so fun. We did one co-op level. Turns out I'm terrible. Oh. So I decided just watching him was going to actually show me way more content than me playing it myself. So right. I've been watching Matt play. That game is adorable.
It is.
I love it. It's so, so, so cute. There's Watermelon Yoshi.
There are so many different kinds of Yoshi. It's like, we heard you liked Yoshi, so we put more Yoshi in your Yoshi.
There is literally, for every single level, there is a new skin for Yoshi you can unlock. And given our conversations in the last few episodes about, you know, DLC and paying for skins and all this kind of extra stuff, like, I'm looking at this Yoshi game and I'm just going, like, I am literally unlocking a Yoshi skin for every single level. That's 8 levels per world. There's 8 skins to get. All you have to do is get the secrets in every level, and you've got a new skin for your Yoshi. Like, thank you for doing it how it should be done. Just giving me the whole game and saying, here's all the cosmetic stuff, too. Like, you get stamps, you get skins, you get all kinds of stuff. Just like, oh, this is so good.
They totally could have charged 99 cents for that watermelon skin. People would buy that.
They could have charged 99 cents for a lot of stuff in that game, and they didn't, because that's the game.
Yeah, and I mean, I probably should mention this just so we don't get an email or two, but like, it does have amiibo support, so I don't know if those amiibo costumes are tied to the amiibo, or you just unlock them instantly by just putting the amiibo on the stand. So you can go as Link Yoshi, I guess, with your Link amiibo.
Yeah, so I don't know. I used my Yoshi, and I know I had to delete the game content that it had on it already, because it had
probably Smash.
Mario Party.
Oh, Mario Party, yeah.
It had Mario Party on it. So I had to delete that, and then I could change whatever my Yoshi amiibo looked like. Yeah. So I picked a skin for my amiibo, basically, but that's all I did.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I know with Mario Maker, the amiibos are just a shortcut to getting the content unlocked there, but I don't know what it is with Woolly World. It might just be just sort of a shortcut to get those costumes. But yeah, the costumes are adorable. But the real question that's burning in everyone's mind is, who wins in a fight, Yarny or Yarn Yoshi?
We may never know.
We may never know, but when you think, I've actually thought about it. I'm glad you asked. What if Yarn Yoshi just, he eats yarn and turns them into eggs. All he has to do is get one lick on that bad boy, and he is a ball of yarn. And then you can throw him into, like, a pit of some kind.
That's true, but in order to actually lick stuff efficiently, you have to, it has to have a little bow on it. So
Does Yarny have a bow? Lick,
I don't know.
You didn't get that far in...
I'm not sure.
What the hell's that game name? okay. I can see that. Well, I mean, maybe it's a tie then. Maybe because they're both made of yarn and they're both so adorable and cute that they just hug it out and be like, we're just going to be friends. We don't need to eat each other.
Maybe Yarny just rides Yoshi.
Gross. But I can see it.
I meant like Mario does.
I know. Gross. No,
Ryan.
I'm just saying... It's a yarn It's an animated yarn thing. It looks so creepy. People think it's cute, but it's kind of creepy.
Barbara thinks it looks super cute. She's like in love with Unravel, and she's just in the chat room right now, like
it's like that grandma.
All the answers to all the questions.
I know, but the grandma in Unravel just has these like weird magic yarn balls, and then it runs around like collecting memories. That sounds like a horror film, like a one step removal of Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm just saying. Think about it.
Attack of the Yoshi. Oh. He's going to sit on my mic.
Do you have a yarn Yoshi? I have a yarn Yoshi behind me. Is it green? I think we had this conversation. I'm having like a weird deja vu. No, that's good. I'm glad you're enjoying Yoshi's Woolly World. It's one of those titles that they just were going to make everything out of yarn and it's going to be great. And it works out. It looks fantastic.
It does. It's really cute. There's a lot of great mechanics. I've really enjoyed watching Matt play. And because he's made of yarn, he can like morph into a whole bunch of different things. Like other Yoshi games have been like, you know, when he jumps and does his little hover thing, it's like his feet going really fast. Well, in this one, his feet turned into a propeller because he's made of yarn. So he can like morph and stuff. It's just, it's really, really cool. It's really cute and challenging too. Like there are some really tough and tricky things that you have to do in that game. So
cool. I heard that the Yoshi, I never played a lot of the Yoshi platformer games, but I heard that they were sort of really well liked by people, and this was sort of a return to that form. And I know like probably the first two worlds are like cakewalks, but as you get going, probably gets a lot harder. So that I'm looking forward to getting a little further if I do get a chance to go back to it. It just seems like a really good one, a better game to play in front of Caden because it's cute and cuddly and not like swords and slicing and
shoot him up and
yeah. It's probably like one of those, like when people have kids out there that listen to this, hopefully, when do they start being impressionalized by this stuff, if that was a word? So like when
are they gonna remember? I think you've got a few years yet.
Okay, perfect. So I'll play, I will, Nintendo, I promise I will revisit Yoshi's Woolly World. I have 2 years to finish The Witcher 3, so
have you ever seen Inside Out? Because I feel like that would give you a really good idea of what things kids remember.
Inside Out? I love that movie. I love that movie. I can't remember. I think I saw it before Caden was born, so I wasn't even sure like if we were having a boy or a girl. So like that was even, it's like, oh my God. It's just such a sad movie. I cried at the end. It's so sad. But it's happy. Did you see it? It's a sad movie. The very end.
It's a happy movie.
It's a happy sad. It's a sad and then a happy, it was a happy cry, okay? It's fine.
Ryan, you're so emotional.
Well, it happens. It happens to the best of us.
But yeah, there's some really cool mechanics. There's actually this one level that Matt was playing just before the show. And it's like hot behind the level. It's like a volcano level.
Really?
And there's like zippers that are moving around in the background. And wherever the zippers come together, a little bit of like fire sneaks through. So you can like shoot a ball of wool at them to like tie them together and close the fire to get by.
What?
It's so cool.
I need to go back to this game now. You know what? Caden can sort of absorb. I've been playing The Witcher in the office. I'm totally joking, but I think that is fantastic. And one of the issues that I had, like, Nintendo likes to take a concept and run with it. And the last time they did this was with the claymation Kirby game. But because that was all like doodling on your, like, drawing lines on the gamepad, you were always looking at this gamepad, and the gamepad view isn't quite as crisp, obviously, as the HD television you have in front of you. So rather than looking at the big, beautiful screen, you're looking at the tiny screen in your lap while you draw lines over top of it. So if your hand isn't covering up the beautiful stuff, it's like, you know, the screen is getting in the way. So it's nice that Woolly's World is yet another, like, just use your controller, have some fun.
Yes.
If you want to play
pro
with the gamepad, you can.
I really like the Pro Controller, and I'm so glad that you don't have to do any kind of gamepad shenanigans with either Yoshi or with Zelda. Like, if we can just have no crazy shenanigans, and we're going to talk about some shenanigans in our topic of the week this week.
Perfect.
But if we could just not have any more shenanigans and any more gimmicks, I would be so, so happy.
Yeah, they kind of dropped that, the gamepad, and I don't know, like, between, like, you've been playing Twilight Princess. Did you at least, like, give it a shot on the gamepad before you okay. So, there's the
all
map.
All I've done with the gamepad is just, like, use my inventory. Like, it's set up on the coffee table beside me. Mm-hmm. And then so I just do like my inventory management and look at the dungeon map and stuff. But
oh, so you have been using
actually,
it.
Oh, yeah. But I haven't actually been like using it as my main controller to play or anything.
Yeah, I haven't been doing that. I've been doing the same thing as you. I kind of have it in front of me. I've even been using the novelty of like using the amiibo, the Wolf Link amiibo to like skip the load screen and jump straight into
the file. Oh, yeah, me too. That is so cool.
It's a neat idea. So
basically, you put your save game on your amiibo, or like it's not even the whole save game. It's just basically saying like this amiibo chooses and loads save number one. So as soon as you get into the part of the game where it says like press start, you can just put the amiibo on the gamepad and it throws you right straight into that save. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a neat feature and sort of one of those like gimmicky things that just ends up being really good.
A gimmick that works. It's not like motion control. It's like, how can I get into my game faster? I put my little thing on the thing and it things.
Yep. It
to
works.
To be technical. Well.
Yeah, that was super technical. It's we need to break that down further. What is the thing? Let's figure this out. But no, the reason I asked was because I think when Zelda for Wii U launches, like that's going to be one of the key features is that map and that inventory. I don't honestly think that Zelda for Wii U is going to have much more than that. Maybe some of like the aiming with the gyroscope, which is completely not needed as well. I think if it, in Twilight Princesses, if you want, you can use the gamepad to aim your arrows and stuff. But yeah. I've been using the analog stick. It works fine. So I have the utmost confidence that Zelda for Wii U will have the pro controller support right out of the gate.
I just don't want any more shenanigans. Speaking of some shenanigans, we actually this week I leveled in 5 hours from 1 to 20 in Warcraft because they announced a new hero portrait. So that's basically like the kind of, I guess, like golden version of a hero in Hearthstone that you actually pay for or you have had to pay for prior to this. So it's a new skin for the Paladin and it's Lady, I can get this. It's not Liadrin, it's like Liadrin, I think.
Liadrin.
I think that's how you say it. So anyway, she is the Blood Elf Paladin Matriarch, the head of the Blood Knights. And she's so cool. It's so awesome.
Okay.
Because basically, like, I mean, Uther, he's okay, but he's very much like very kind of boring, very vanilla. Like he's the dude who's head of the Paladins and he's, you know, human and he's good and he's, you know, for the light and just his character is very, I guess, traditional is also a good way to put it. And and the Lady Liadrin, she's very one of those kind of like was on the wrong path because she was misled and then, you know, like a whole kind of redemption story. So from a lore perspective, she's just so cool and her artwork is amazing. So
and it's anyways, free.
It's free, but what you have to do is level a character from 1 to 20. So in the past, the three previous characters that were available were $10 each, and now this one is you can download WoW for free and play through the free content, which is levels 1 to 20 with the starter edition. So everyone was like, oh man, it's so much work, it's so time consuming. I leveled literally as slow as you could possibly level with like no buffs, no bonuses, no dungeons, no nothing, and it took me 5 hours, so...
Yeah, and it gives you an excuse to play a different race, which, if as we all know, in an MMO, most people pick a character, stick with it, and then revisit it every time new content comes out. I know there are, you know, people out there who are altaholics like I was when I was playing WoW back in the day, but a lot of folks don't get their starting character or their extra characters past like level 10, like past like the intro zone. So I think giving me an excuse to play 1 through 20 again to get that extra bonus, not just experiencing content, but getting a bonus. Like, I'm trying to think of a race that I never actually got to level 20. Like, it might... Like, Goblin? I don't think I got through Goblin or the Worgen.
Oh, the Goblin starting zone is so brutal, though. It's like...
Oh, is it?
Freaking... I almost swore a little harder than that. But it's like Jersey Shore. It's the worst. Oh,
okay. Well, then maybe
like
I won't do Goblin.
The worst of the worst, like, stereotypes ever. It's just awful. I can't. I tried to have... Because I wanted to have a Goblin warrior. Because I thought it was really cool having, like, the smallest possible race be, like, the rarer tank. And since I play Horde, I don't play Alliance. I couldn't have a gnome. So I was like, well, the gnome equivalent is goblin. No, no. The goblins are terrible. I hate that starting zone so much. I went with undead just because I like the undead lore and starting area and stuff.
But I haven't done that. My original character when I started WoW like 10 years ago was an undead warrior. And since Cataclysm, they redid it. So I haven't actually done that. Maybe I should go back and do it. If I boost a character to level 100...
No, it doesn't count.
Damn it. Well, no, I'm not trying to,
you
like...
You have to actually, like, shortcuts. Hit... If you have a character that's, like, level 19 and you level that to 20, that counts. Basically, it's just that action of hitting level 20 is what causes the achievement to go off, which is, yeah, how you get the hero. So okay. You do actually have to level to 20 somehow.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like the Heroes of the Storm vulture thing where it was a pain in the butt to do after recruiting all your friends before there was an incentive. This is kind of just like, hey, play some WoW, have some fun. We'll give you a $10 value, in which if you wanted to get back into WoW and you weren't, you can do it for free. You said like you can do the starter pack.
Yeah, and actually, Blizzard CS clarified that you can actually, even if you have an old inactive WoW account, because basically when you reactivate because you have higher level characters and you have to pay the subscription, but they said because you also have to do it on whatever Battle.net email account is tied to your Hearthstone account, which kind of makes sense because it's an account based thing. So basically they said that every Battle.net account can actually hold up to as many as 8 WoW subscriptions. So what you can do is you can start an entirely new Warcraft subscription, quote unquote, but you don't actually pay anything. You just use the starter edition. So you can have like your level 100 subscription and you can have a starter edition on the same account. So you don't actually have to reactivate an old account and pay any money. So,
and those, but those characters exist on two different accounts. Right. Okay. So if I wanted to continue,
so it's
that
the same,
character.
It's the same Battle.net account, but it's a different Warcraft subscription.
Right. Okay. Well,
so you can do it, even someone who has an old account, you can do it for free still.
Right. But then that character that got to 20, if they actually wanted to continue doing it, they would have to have 2 subscriptions if they ever did come back to the game.
Yeah, if they ever did, yeah.
Okay. But. Yeah. Oh, that sounds good. And like, at least for those people who have that excuse, like, oh, I'm not playing WoW right now. Like, now I have to resub. This is worse than paying $10. Like, I'm sure you've heard the gambit of complaints. The internet loves to complain. I'm sure Reddit was on fire. I'm sure Google got in there, too, with a little bit of fire. But, like, it's okay, everybody. Like, there's a reason that they haven't launched these things lately at $10 a piece. Like, this is a cool experiment, and I think it's like Heroes giving away a free hero, you know, which they did in a cool way with Cho'Gall. But it's nice to see a company that makes millions of dollars experimenting while rewarding their players. Like, this is a positive. Like, if you look at a lot of other companies making a lot of money, they're not throwing away solid pieces of content for, not throwing away, but giving it away for free. They'd rather charge for it. So,
It's kind of interesting because a lot of the Hearthstone pros, like, they want to have the alternate hero portrait, so they're actually jumping into Warcraft, most of them for the first time. So to see people like Tice tweet out and be like, hey, I'm streaming Warcraft, like, I'm going to level to 20, you know, come on, guys. It's really cool. So I think it's actually going to be really good for Warcraft. I think there's going to be a lot of people exposed to the universe that Hearthstone is essentially built on for the first time. So I think it's really cool. I like it. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, no,
it's a way to get a free hero, which, you know, everyone before was like, it costs $10, and now it's like, it's free, but it takes time. It's like, yeah, it's one or the other. It's either money or time. You can't just have it.
You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't, and Blizzard probably has that now inscribed above their meeting room where they make these decisions, so.
Yeah, really.
Not a surprise.
So I just wanted to remind everybody that this episode of The Gamers Inn is brought to you by the Black Desert Online Guild called Knights Templar. So Ryan, I don't know if you tuned in last week, but we talked a little bit about, it's an MMO, I think, right? Have you heard of Black Desert Online?
Yeah, I actually played a little bit of the beta a few months ago. It's now, I think it's now open and available to everybody. It's that game you saw kind of coming around with the wacky character creation, and that you have all these options and you can create a character that you'd like to play hundreds of hours, or you could create a character that looks like a monster. and then stare at that for hundreds of hours. So it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of great YouTube videos out there. But if you're looking to play it, it is one of those, I think it's a Korean MMO that's been brought over to the US. It's another one of those, but
so good. Like Terra, kind of?
Yeah, like Terra. But like it's a more solid MMO. I think it's kind of actually sticking around as opposed to the others that come over and have a big fire and then fizzle out.
Yeah, it seems to have a lot of just like steady people who are in it are really enjoying it. It's a lot of kind of steady talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've
been really enjoying what I've been seeing of it on the social medias, mm-hmm. as the kids call it.
So if you do want to play for hundreds of hours, you know what you should do, Ryan. What? You should absolutely get in there with a group of friends. But sometimes, you know, like your friends might be playing other games. Your friends might be in Warcraft. Your friends mm-hmm. might be in Hearthstone, whatever. So you might need to make some new friends. And the best way to do that is to find a guild. And Knights Templar are currently recruiting. They are fun, they are active, and they focus on teamwork, which is always really good. There's nothing worse than jumping into a group and then having them be like, oh, why don't you have like all of the gear and all of the things, and you're terrible, and get out, vote to kick, you know? So,
oh, no.
So these guys are not like that at all. Very inclusive, tons of teamwork. They're all over the US and Australia, so you can always find people to play with. They are literally covering like all of the time zones.
That's a good chunk.
That's a pretty big, yeah.
That's today and tomorrow.
Exactly. They are a futuristic guild.
Yeah, they are in the future. Oh my god, they're in the future. They've come back to tell us to play BDO.
So seems you like a know waste it of must time. Be good.
Time machine. But no, that's really cool, and I'm looking forward to checking this out. Now, I haven't fully looked into Black Desert Online, but I'm pretty sure it's a free-to-play. Like, you can just jump in, or it's one of those, like, pay $20 for a bunch of cool stuff and then get access. I don't know.
I'm not 100% sure. What I do know is that they don't have subscriptions. So it's either free to play or it's like a Guild Wars, like buy it up front and then you're done. So so yeah, just wanted to remind everybody to check out KnightsTemplarGuild.com, which is like a super pro looking website. It's amazing.
I said this last week
and I really can't get over it. It looks really, really cool. So again, that is Black Desert Online and the guild is Knights Templar. Go join up and tell them the Gamers Inn sent you.
So it is buy to play. It's you got the Traveler's package, which is a $30 access. And then it also gives you a guest pass for $7. So that's not too bad. Nice. And then there's the like premium, pay a little extra, get some cool stuff. So that's really neat. I have been meaning to check this game out again. When I played it in beta, it was very populated and there was a lot of people jumping around in the starting area, which is never fun. So I should revisit it because it's like the active combat, which is really cool. You don't see that in MMOs very often. So yeah, it sounds cool. I'll check that out.
So that brings us to our topic of the week this week, and we are talking about, not surprisingly, VR is launching on PlayStation for all of the dollars.
But not as many dollars as the other options.
When you think about the fact that you have to have a PlayStation, then it kind of is more dollars.
But you have to think of the fact of owning a very powerful PC for the other ones, I think. Anyways, let's talk
about it. Yeah, we'll get into that.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, so later this fall, we're looking at October 2016, for retailing for $400 US or $550 Canadian, you can get the PlayStation Virtual Reality set.
PlayStation which is, VR.
Yeah. So I think let's get into what PlayStation is actually going to be offering before we kind of get into a more like general VR discussion. But so you do need the PlayStation camera, which is kind of another added-on thing. Do you need the Move controllers or not?
You don't need them, but some games will support them, is what I understand. Yeah. And I don't know if there's, like, PlayStation 4-specific Move controllers. I did the Wii thing, and then I skipped the follow-ups from Sony and Microsoft, except for the Kinect. I did have a Kinect, so I just lied to everybody there. But
yeah,
I did
totally did.
I did, yeah, but I at least admitted it. I did skip the PlayStation Move controllers, which did require the camera. So if you have the Move controllers, then you probably have the PS3 camera. So you're gonna have to buy a new camera as well.
Yeah, fun. No, we have the PlayStation, we have the camera, but we don't have Move controllers, I don't think.
I think...
Oh, no, Matt's nodding. Yeah. We apparently have Move controllers.
I did try the Move controllers, and it was a sweet archery game, and that was about it. And so at least he's made the investment. So you are PlayStation VR ready.
I'm primed. I'm $550 and a few months away from... definitely not getting a virtual reality headset.
Yeah, but it looks cool, right? Like, it looks okay. Something that's from the future, really.
Ryan, You know me.
I do.
You know me quite well. I have been talking to me now for over 4 years about gaming.
Right.
You have been there through thick and thin, through many different types of games. I think probably the worst of which was Five Nights at Freddy's.
Sure, yeah.
Imagine... if every single game you played felt to you like Five Nights at Freddy's feels to me. If I was totally immersed in any video game, even like a Zelda or a freaking Yoshi's Woolly World, I'm pretty sure I would turn around, there would be some sort of enemy in my face, and I would scream. Even if that enemy is cushy and made of wool.
So you're not implying that all the games launching on this are horror games?
No. Okay. I'm implying that virtual reality to me would feel like a horror game. Oh. I can be in the bathroom, like, brushing my hair, and, like, Matt can just be standing there, and I will turn around and I will, like, jump. Because he's standing outside the bathroom. Like, it's a totally normal thing. He doesn't mean to scare me. It's just... who I am. I don't know if I have terrible peripheral vision or something, but things are always scaring me.
Okay, so that's an interesting... That's not an interesting... that sounds terrible. So, but what I'm trying to get at is that it's an interesting predicament, and what I would say is most of those games with VR that are doing that to you that aren't set out to do that. So a horror game, you're just going to want to outright avoid.
Oh, obviously. But, I pretty much outright avoid those anyway.
Yeah. But when it comes to VR titles and VR titles that and putting things in front of you quickly that'll scare you, that's bad design for a VR title. So if you were to try out any of the VR titles, like, wait, you would probably have to wait a year. Because I think the initial batch of VR titles are going to be what you're describing. So if you're sensitive to that type of experience, that's what you're going to be experiencing with a lot of those games that are like, I don't know, let's use an example. Like, let's use like games like something trying to be The Witcher, but VR. That game is going to utterly fail for you and a lot of gamers. But for games that are setting out to be like, okay, we're going to make a good VR experience, this is going to be a different experience, I think those games would work for you. I don't know if you've seen a lot of those games, and I haven't seen a lot of them, but there are those titles out there that are taking VR very seriously and creating an experience that isn't just Uncharted but VR edition. Like, it's an experience. It's an on-rails virtual reality experience that feels very cool and very real. I mean, there are people that I know and trust that have talked about using VR and really say, like, yeah, this is it. It's working. It's great. And your three options being PlayStation VR, Vive, and Rift are all going to have crappy experiences that you're describing perfectly, where you turn around and something pops up and scares you. Like, that's just bad design. But there are going to be those games... not sure if it's worth $550, but there's going to be that one or two titles that'll be like, yeah, this is why you should buy VR. And I think even for you, like, I think that would work. But yeah.
I'm sorry, your face froze. Like, I don't even know, probably a good 30 seconds ago. There you go.
Right. I didn't even notice it. I just, like, man, I look deep in thought.
Yeah. I'm like trying to pay attention to what you're saying. I just,
yeah, it's fine.
I'm super pro right now, you guys.
But long story short, I think there are going to be titles out there that will sell VR for even the biggest skeptic. I'm not willing to spend $550 to convince anybody, not even myself, if it's worth it. But I think that down the road, VR is going to be, it's going to be one of two things. It's going to be the motion control of 5 years ago or 10 years ago or whatever it was, where it was big and then fizzled out, or it's going to be the next big thing. But I don't know, like, at $399 US, that seems like this is the best way for people to try VR and see if it's their thing. This is a solid price.
it's still really steep, I think. And even though there's going to be 50 games available between like October and December, it's still like there's going to have to be some life-altering experience, you know, like there's going to have to be something where like every single gamer who has tried it is talking about it and raving and just saying it is the best thing ever. And I don't know, I'm not even sure what that game would look like. And for me specifically, with the whole like hating jump scare, like it's not even, this is the thing, they don't even have to be like jump scares, just having like a border around like a computer screen or a TV and just like that little bit of removal is enough for me to play through and enjoy 99% of games. Like, I didn't enjoy Five Nights at Freddy's, but at least I can appreciate it for what it is. Like, it is made to jump scare you.
Yeah.
And so, but even then, like, if that was in any way, shape, or form, like, my entire field of vision, I probably would have just, like, puked and passed out. Like...
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not the person, I'm with you, like, I don't have an interest in picking this up. I think it's awesome that this is the most viable way to play VR games in terms of a cost, because PlayStation 4 is one of the top-selling consoles available right now, and a lot of people who would be interested in VR or remotely interested kind of look at this as, like, well, am I going to buy the PlayStation VR for a system I already have? And the camera... They've already said the reason they have not put the camera in the bundle, which is because a lot of people already own it. And they are going to have a bundle where you can get the camera with it at a reduced price. They just haven't. It's March. It's coming out in October. So we still have some time. But you look at the other options and it's like, this is the mass market option for VR. Like, it's either that or putting your phone in a cardboard box thing. And I think that's like literally like, I'm going to try VR and be like, whoa, my phone is in a cardboard box. Like, I don't get that. But I think that this is sort of your mass market solution. And Sony's probably very smart to capitalize on what the Rift has been doing for VR. And I don't know anybody who is going to go out and buy this that isn't claiming it as a tax write-off. You know, most of the people who said, oh, I'm going to get it and I'm going to pre-order it. It's like, I think literally Scott said, like, it's a tax write-off, so I'm going to buy it. Like, I don't know. Do you know anybody that's interested in buying this? Is Matt going to go out and buy the PlayStation VR? Is that a thing that he's talking about? I don't
know. Matt, are you going to go buy the PlayStation VR? The chat room wants to know. Probably. He says probably.
All right. But he has everything, right? So
he's one of those gamers that just has all of the things. So yeah. That answer doesn't really surprise me.
Like, he has a Kinect, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, see, there are those people out there that are willing to just
Pay the ticket. He doesn't have a Kinect. Have a Kinect.
But, you know, you know what I mean. But yeah. I think when it comes to PlayStation VR, it's one of those add-ons. It's like, I bought the PlayStation 4 like 2-3 years ago. I think it's time to, you know, put an expansion
pass in. You're looking at this as basically like another console purchase.
I think so.
Because that's what it's on the level of, right? Like, you're more than doubling the cost of a PlayStation in order to get this. And it's been a few years since those things launched. So you could kind of, in a way, rationalize it as like, well, this is upgrading my PlayStation because there is no new PlayStation on the horizon. So, you know, I'm not going to go buy the PlayStation 5 because that's not a thing that's going to exist for years. So...
Yeah,
I'm going to buy the PlayStation VR to go with my PlayStation 4, and then it's like a whole new experience.
Yeah, and you're therefore, I mean, according to Sony, you're doubling the amount of entertainment you're getting out of your PlayStation 4 because you have more generic PlayStation 4 games, and then you have VR PlayStation 4 games. So you're getting two experiences in one box that is now doubled in price. And I'm sure there will
be
more.
Is there a list of games that are going to be available, or they just said there's 50 titles?
They just said 50 between October and the end of the year. And some of those games have been announced, one of them being probably something you'll want to avoid, which is the... although you did enjoy... now I'm forgetting the stupid horror game that we played that was really good. wasn't stupid at all.
Until really Dawn?
Good. Yeah, they're doing an Until Dawn VR experience.
Oh my god. Yeah. Do you guys remember how much I jumped and mm-hmm. screamed when that dude was in the window at like the very beginning? Like, or the, oh my god, can you imagine if you were like in the view of the girl in the bathtub when like the killer dude like walks behind her?
I think that's the reason.
I could not do that. Like, I'm getting a little panicky, and I'm sitting here at my computer, like, not, like, it, this is all just in my mind, and I'm getting a little bit, like, I can't handle that.
Yeah, but Matt's in the room, so now he knows, oh, he's getting the PlayStation VR. He knows you liked Until Dawn. There's an Until Dawn experience coming on PlayStation VR. Whoa. I don't know if you saw the Star Wars. I know you're not a huge Star Wars fan like myself, but they announced the Star Wars Battlefront experience, which I think is another PlayStation VR title.
You keep saying experience, and this mm-hmm. is another thing that I feel might be a problem with VR, is that I don't feel like we're going to get VR games. I feel like we're going to get VR experiences, which are going to be very pared down compared to what we're used to seeing in games, because putting someone in a virtual environment, it takes that much more time, money, design, you know, all the rest of it. So I feel like if we're used to getting a 30-hour game, we might get a 2-hour VR experience. And but for the same price as a, you know, $60, $70, $80 game. And I'm a little bit worried about that.
Well, the way these things work is they start as experiences. So I don't know. Do you remember the Fable Kinect game? Do you remember that game?
Vaguely. I never played it.
Yeah, it was terrible. which I don't know, did you even talk about it on last week that like Lionhead's shutting down and Fable?
No, we didn't talk about it, but yeah.
That's the saddest thing ever. Lionhead is shutting
down. I know, I'm so sad because I love Fable. I want more Fable content, and it looked like they were moving in a good direction, so
yeah, it's Legends looked neat. But it was sad news. But using that series as a poor example for this is that basically that Kinect adventure started as an experience, as like, here's the Fable game with Kinect, and then they came in with the experience, and you could sell it as a full game. It was a full game experience, but it was terrible. And maybe in like a short 2-hour experience it would have been okay, but it's just another example of like trying to build that series within the constructs of that technology. So I don't know if the Until Dawn VR game is going to be good, but the whole reason I'm probably not even going to think about picking this up is because the games have to be there. The games is what makes this important, right? Mm-hmm. It's like
it's the same as any new console, really.
Yeah.
You know, what exclusives are there? What titles are there? What can I do with this huge investment?
Yeah, right now it's like, oh, I'll be able to swing around a lightsaber for $10. Like, okay, I'll be able to play Until Dawn smushed up on my face. Perfect. But that's not $550. That's not selling me. There are going to be people that go out and just pre-order it, like, sight unseen. But I think E3 is going to be the year. Like, it's going to be HoloLens 2.0, PlayStation VR, Vive, Rift, and then Nintendo. Go figure. What if Nintendo announces the NX? It's like, we're making a PlayStation 4 with Nintendo on it. It's going to be great. And everyone's else like, look, you got goggles. It's awesome. And there's 3D glass fingers. I don't know. Like, it's going to be crazy.
And Nintendo's like, damn it.
They're
so behind.
Yeah, they can't even keep up with their own trends that they set up. I mean, like, it's their fault, really. It's that damn Wii. But it's going to be an interesting shift when you get to E3. It's all going to be that groan, like, we're going to talk about VR for half an hour. But I'm not sold. So you're not interested in VR. I'm not interested in VR, but it is the cheapest option.
Yeah, it depends. It really depends. I think in general, I don't like gimmicks. I want them to stop. I like sitting on my couch and I like pushing buttons. I like sitting at my computer and I like clicking the mouse. I don't want to have to use my body and shake motion controllers and look all around and get freaking terrified by things jumping out in front of me. I don't know. I'm not looking forward to that like immersive experience. I like my games the way they are. I'm totally fine with it. If they just came out with the same shit for the next 20 years, I'd be totally fine with that. So I don't know.
It's good for those folks.
I'm being called a curmudgeon. I'm so dark angel in the chat room.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
it's nice that there's an option for those folks who want to experience VR, and they can, for the literally the bare bones price. So if you already own a PS4, it's the cheapest entry. You're looking at the Rift. You're looking at, I think it was $599 American, so probably like seven something Canadian. And then you need a high-end PC for both that and the Vive. And the Vive is $1,200 Canadian. That's just the device and everything required to play those games. And it's like, that is an instant no to me. Because it's just too much money. Like, there's no way I'd be able to justify more than a video card. One component of a high-end PC costs less than those VR devices. Like, that to me is mind-blowing. And I know there are people out there who are early adopters and want to get in on that. And that's cool. Tell me how it is. I want to know. I'll read the reviews. I'll watch the videos. Mm-hmm. And that's how I will experience it, at least for the first round.
Yeah, because Town to Ghost in the chat room brings up an excellent point, too. This is all first gen. Like, it might be cheaper and better if you just hold off for a year.
Yeah, especially with the Rift and the Vive. I mean, being PC peripherals, like, they are going to Apple that stuff and come out with a new one every year that's, like, slightly better. Like, there's going to be a Rift S next year and a Vives next year. I don't think you'll get a PlayStation VR 2. Like, I think they'll release that and they'll just, like, Sony likes to release peripherals and let them die in the water. Like, I think it's like the Kinect all over again. I think it's just gonna sit there, and I mean, maybe it'll be a bigger part of PlayStation 5, who knows.
So on that note, we should remind everyone that it is our patron hangout and game night tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern. I should set some kind of a reminder in my calendar so I don't forget this time. We're going to do everything over on our Discord server. So make sure, if you're a patron of the Gamers Inn, go to patreon.com/thegamersinn and get all that information and get in there ready to go and ask your questions tomorrow night. We wanted to make sure that we thank our patron Will S. this week. Thank you so much for supporting the Gamers Inn. We wouldn't have the hangout and game night without you guys. We don't know what we're playing tomorrow night yet, so that is up to you. Again, if you go to patreon.com/thegamersinn, you can vote on what you want to play with us and make sure that you are ready in Discord so we can take your questions and we can pull you in to play whatever you want to play tomorrow night live on twitch.tv/JossPlays. And I think that's it for us this week. If you want to visit us on the web, you can do so at gamersinpodcast.com. You can find us on Amove TV, along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, and The Angry Chicken. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at R. Murphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/AmoveTV. You can also find the show on Facebook and Google+. If you'd like to email the show and let us know what you think about PlayStation VR, you can do so at info@gamersinpodcast.com. So thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn. And remember, tune in next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.